Let's talk to the real George Brockler. I think it's the real George Brockler here on as a guest. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, and I was led to believe I was going to be the swear word caller this morning, so
okay.
I feel like I've been cheated.
Hey, George, so I wanted to talk to you. Is, you know, the district attorney, 18th Judicial District, one of the first things I wanted to ask you about is James Holmes, the Aurora Theater shooter, was at the Department of Corrections, and they transferred him around a little bit there, but now I guess he's gone out of state, but we don't know where?
Nope. We don't know where. They won't tell us. They won't tell the victims. We were notified in a similar fashion to the victims, and that there was a pretty vague email that just said, hey, he's been sent out of the state, and that was it. So we made some efforts to try to figure out where he went. They, of course, are shrouded in a secrecy that is even greater than the federal government.
Wow.
So when people have said, hey, isn't there some issues about protection and safety? I'm sure there are. But what I know right now is you can go to Google, and you can Google any notorious federally convicted inmate from Tsarnaev to Richard Reed to Rob Blagojevich and find exactly where they're located. It doesn't make sense that this guy needs even more secret protection than they do.
Well, here's the other thing. You could go to Google, and you could find the location of any one of the victims and go find him if you wanted to. And, I mean, to me, what kind of gets me is why on earth does he have more rights to privacy than any of the people he victimized?
That's a great question. Why does he have more rights to privacy and anonymity? I mean, they could have even changed his identity. I think given that the federal government is willing to expose the identities and locations of the worst that they prosecute, and some who are child killers, too, by the way. You know, Terry Nichols blew up the Murrah building.
Yeah.
That had kids in it. You can find where he's housed.
Right.
Tsarnaev blew up that poor boy over at the Boston Marathon. You can find out where he is. What concerns me is that it is almost a tacit admission that, you know what, we can't actually protect him. We've lost the ability to protect this guy at the state and local level because of who he is, and that doesn't make a lot of sense.
I assume this is the Department of Corrections?
Department of Corrections, exactly.
How can they get away with that? Real, I guess.
Because they can.
I guess they just cannot tell us, huh? Well, let me ask you this, though. I know there are victim notification laws. For instance, when people are going to be released or something like that, victims are notified. You would think, because, I mean, they're victims from that shooting all over the country. I would think that they would have a right to be notified that he's in their state.
Or even if he's not in their specific state, something. I mean, we have had contact from victims who have legitimate concerns about where he's located. One, they're concerned. This is a guy who, and you saw this Julian trial, this is a guy who told both psychiatrist, he still believes to this day that he values himself more the more people he kills. We don't have to look much further than New York, Ted Bundy, and other stories in between to see that people can escape from custody. And for these people that he victimized, they have legitimate angst over where is he. I also, as the prosecutor, feel like he committed crimes in Colorado. He had to be punished by Colorado in Colorado.
Who's the head of Department of Corrections these days?
It's Rick Ramish.
Yeah.
Have you talked to him at all? Or
I ran into Rick at another event right as they were transferring this guy to San Carlos, which is a prison, but it has more mental health type inmates. But I had not heard from him since then. Mm. I had told him, hey, look, I have a sincere interest in wanting to know where this guy is and why he gets there and how he stays.
You know, I imagine.
We don't know. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, you probably aren't on like the main DOC Christmas list after the whole El Turkey thing either, though. So,
again, more secrecy, though.
Right.
I mean, this is what concerns me is when I look to the federal government and say they're more transparent than our state government.
That's not good.
Bizarre world.
Well, and there's a, I guess, maybe I'm being too, no, I'm not being too harsh here. Here's the thing, you know, if James Holmes wanted to be worried about his safety, he shouldn't have shot everybody in the movie theater, right? I mean, to me, you give a little bit up there, and it's like, of course, prison isn't a totally safe place, you know? Playgrounds aren't safe. Movie theaters aren't safe, and so that's just too bad for him. And here's the thing. I mean, first of all, I think he's sort of a highly recognizable guy. I think it probably would not shock the inmates who saw him wherever he is to realize that he was the Aurora Theater shooter. I mean, I think they probably figured that out. So I don't understand. I guess I don't know. Are the regulations say the Department of Corrections can just do whatever they want here?
it seems like they are given carte blanche to make any decision in their discretion that impacts the safety and health of inmates. Let me tell you two other things that give me concerns. One is we have to take on board here in our borders to get another state to trade for this guy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if he's that horrible, you don't just call up Ohio and say, hey, we want to send you one. They go, hold on. If you're going to give us the Tom Brady of mass murderers, we want to give you a whole bunch of draft picks and a whole bunch of other things to take off of us.
Right.
So did we just take on a bunch more super violent people to swap this guy? Did we give up straight up cash? Aren't we entitled to know that? And the other thing is, for a guy who says, I still believe I'm more valuable the more people I kill, did they send him to a state, unlike Colorado, where if he murders an inmate or a prison guard, that there is no additional consequence to him because they don't have a death penalty there?
Yeah.
Here, if he killed again, we'd at least have it as a talking point. At least we'd have the option. Out there, he could kill someone, you know, in a state that doesn't have the death penalty, and insist on going to trial to have more of his notoriety for, at the end of the day, having the exact same sentence, maybe a little bit less Jell-O and crayons, but, you know, nothing different.
Well, what about the security measures, too? I mean, do we have anything to say? Or once he's sent to another state, is he pretty much under their Department of Corrections rules? So if they have different rules that say, well, he can be in a medium security facility, or he's behaved, he can be in a, I mean, do we have any kind of say as to how secure he's kept?
That is such a great question. Another one I hadn't thought of. My guess is they dictate how he's housed. We don't get to say, hey, he only gets so many hours of free time and these are the people he can interact with. But aren't these questions the public should get to ask their taxpayer-funded Department of Corrections to say,
well, what
do you
think at least the DA?
Yeah, you'd think at least you would be able
DA
to get
out. Might be able to kind of ask him, but I guess.
Well, here's the question. I bet the governor could ask him.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Julius. The governor could pick up the phone and call his appointee, the executive director, and say, where'd you send him? And my guess is he doesn't say, I'm sorry, governor.
I can't tell you.
I got to keep it a secret from you. So the governor of the state of Colorado, whose knowledge and intimacy with criminal justice is as far removed as any we've had in the past 4 years, gets to have this information. But not the person that tried to keep him accountable. I mean, that's weird.
No, that's crazy. Well, and it just, again, I think it's such an insult to the victims. And I would say he's an inmate, you know? He's a mass murderer. Why are we so worried about it that we're going to say, okay, we're going to cause further pain and trauma and angst to the victims. We're going to cause potential headaches for, you know, just, I mean, we're going to insult the public because we want to make sure that his rights are protected. And I'm just a little bit of a rant on my part here, too. And the same thing, the public defender's office, who they're necessary, they do a great job, but they should be transparent and also let us know how much money they spent to keep him alive, or, you know, in that case, in any case. They shouldn't get to hide behind this secrecy either. You guys can't.
No, and you know how I feel about that. Yeah. I think Holly Lawrence is going to run a bill that's hopefully going to apply to the judiciary. But one other thing, and that is we were significantly concerned, too, before this happened, that they were going to send him to California,
right,
where he'd have greater access to those people that love and care for him to make it easier to go and visit him. That seemed pretty frustrating, especially for the victims. Now, DOC sent an email that said, hey, we're not going to send him to California. But I got to be honest, when you're secret about 99% of the information, the 1% you want me to believe, that's a tough call. I want to know.
Well, what about, so let's say they sent him to just say Michigan. Well, let's say then Michigan, is there anything preventing Michigan from sending him to California?
That part I don't know. I don't know how much control we still have or veto power over where they ship him.
Yeah,
but again, these are fantastic questions to ask, and I come back to the thing I led with, which is how is the federal government more transparent and more certain of itself on providing public access to location of inmates than our own Department of Corrections?
Well, our Department of Corrections, who's their PR firm? Because they don't
say, you know, and sometimes the public information officers, you know, I'm sure, you know, it's not an easy job, but recently there was in Denver a guy, they were transporting the DOC an inmate who somehow escaped from a van that he was being transported in at I-70 in Sheridan and ran away. You know, so you want to ask the obvious question, how did that happen? They caught him right away, but they just issued a statement saying they're not saying anything.
Yeah, right. It's under investigation.
It's kind of like the Army, you know? You can't. It's like, we could tell you, but then we'd have to kill you. Well, listen, and one other topic I wanted to ask you about, if you, you know, feel free if there's something else going on, too. But I know there's some talk about one of the bills up in the legislature that recently convened, the sexting thing, changing it so that it gives prosecutors a little bit, particularly when it involves kids, sexting, I guess, to each other. You know, you don't have to convict everybody of child pornography. What do you think of that bill, and where's that going?
That's a bill sponsored by Rhonda Fields, and I'd have to say, on almost any other social values issue, I imagine we are not in the same thing.
Right.
But
right.
In my time in office, Representative Fields has been phenomenal on criminal justice matters for us. In fact, taking on the entirety of the other Democrats on the issues of the death penalty and things like that. So one of the things I appreciate about this bill is we came to her, and other people have come to her and said, look, here are the only tools the prosecutors have. Do nothing or charge them, even as a juvenile, with the child pornography charge, which carries registration as a sex offender. And that means you can't seal it when they're not juveniles anymore. So this, I think, is a reasonable, measured way to say, look, there's got to be something in between nothing and everything. And so this provides, only available to juveniles, a misdemeanor, non-sex offense charge that allows us to bring them into the periphery of the system through diversion, or even if we ended up taking them into court where they can get we're working on a specific class to deal with this that's rolling out this quarter. But to address those things without putting them in a position where this thing haunts them for the rest of their lives, because it's not that kind of offense.
Exactly. And the DA, and I forget who the DA is, who decided not to charge them, you know, kudos to him. Kudos to Tom Ledoux. I mean, some people are saying he's required to, and you kind of go, DAs are not required to do anything. They have such incredible discretion. And when a DA tells you, that's what Mitch Morrissey tried to pull off when he indicted a poor school teacher who didn't call the police because during Valentine's Day, a little boy gave a peck on the cheek of a little girl, and he was going to charge her, and he kept on going, I have to do it. And we wrote an editorial about what a fraud that was, and we got a call from his office. But he said, stop calling.
How do you get to Glendale? You got to go through Denver.
Well, let me just, one final question. Anything else going? Because I know you keep.
Well, there is. I want to ask, isn't there a bill that would extend the statute of limitations or get rid of the statute of limitations for sexual assaults?
There is. And again, this is another bill run by Representative Fields. And, you know, to say that this isn't the Bill Cosby bill, you kind of have to squint real hard to see that.
Because it
didn't exist before this. Now, we've had conversations in the past about, is 10 years enough for these kinds of crimes, for what it does to victims and how long they report? But we have, with virtually every other aspect of sex assault, I'll give you the two examples that I can think of. One is, if it's sex assault against a child, there is no statute of limitations. If it's sex assault and someone goes in and reports and provides DNA, there's no statute of limitations. So this is the last piece of that, I guess, potential victim circle, and that is people who are victims for which there is either no DNA or they don't go in and report right away. I have my own concerns about this because, as you know, Chuck, as an attorney, statute of limitations exists to limit government. It doesn't exist for any other reason.
Exactly. It's an awful, in my bill, it's an awful bill. It is an awful bill. It is hard enough. It is hard enough when you have he said, she said cases when they're a week old, when they're a month old. If you have them where they are decades old, the chance for injustice is enormous. It's just enormous. And the fact that Bill Cosby is getting away with it, you know, hard cases make for bad law, but to do away with that is to create injustice. And we've watched enough DNA cases where there is injustice that no one in their right mind can believe that juries are always right. We know they're not always right. They do the very best they can, but there is enormous number of cases. We have the case coming up here in Colorado where they charged the guy
Moselle,
and now, you know, he served 28 years. The police, quote unquote, lost all the DNA evidence. I mean, you know, do we really have to have more injustice? Because that's what the bill is. It's injustice. If you haven't reported a rape for 30 years, maybe that's not a case that should be tried, regardless of the fact that, 30 years ago something happened.
I think that's a compelling argument. I do. And I think that what is required here, because this is pulling off a limitation on what prosecutors can pursue, I think is to, one, make sure we continue to make prosecutors accountable to the public through
right.
frequent elections, and I guess the term limits that we have imposed. But I said this to Rhonda, I've said this to others who've asked me about it. I said, I don't know if this will result in one extra case being filed. As you pointed out, these cases are extremely difficult a year later,
yes.
30 years later. So
yes.
the part that you're concerned about, and it's legitimate when you're talking about the government, is the abuse of that prosecutorial discretion. Someone
right.
who would take thin evidence, figure out a way to get an indictment or an information filed, drag someone through trial, and possibly – that's all legitimate.
Or get them to plea bargain. Or get them to plea bargain. Hey,
or plea bargain.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to charge you. Hey, we found out. We got this. You know, some sharp police detective go, I know how I'll get this guy. Well, you know, we can't get him on this charge. Well, which is really what the Al Turkey case is. We can't get him on this charge, and we can't get him on this charge. So let's invent another charge. That'd have been another good little one.
I don't think that's the Al Turkey thing.
That is the Al Turkey thing.
All right, we'll go.
It is the Al Turkey thing.
We got Al Turkey on trial, though. Jury found him guilty.
That's right.
They found him guilty. What they really thought is he was a terrorist, and then they decided, well, we don't have any evidence on the terrorist, so we'll get him on a sex crime.
That's a different topic for a different day.
Anyway, Julie and I disagree with that one, but as you might tell.
I think the other side of this, though, and maybe this would be Julie's position, is, look, being a victim of a sexual assault, and I've never been, I can't claim to be, but from the ones that I've dealt with over 20 years of doing this and from the cases that I've sat in on and been briefed on, it changes a person and it affects them, and a willingness to come forward and subject yourself to a system by saying, I have been sexually assaulted. That is not insignificant, and I can see circumstances where there may be enough evidence to move forward and someone is allowed to be kept in a position to come forward and say, this is what happened to me, can you investigate
and,
this?
But it's the incredible abuse. In fact, there's a recent priest case where a priest was destroyed, and now they found that the claims are utterly, utterly fraudulent. So he died a defrocked priest. Accused of a crime that's now proven probably never occurred. So the other side's important,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it is.
This same bill was tried in Nevada, I think, last year with the same terms, and what they ended up compromising to was extending the statute of limitations, I think, to 20 years, which would be a doubling of our current statute of limitations. And I have to say, you know, I am committed to the idea that 10 years is probably not enough, but unlimited is tougher. If we ended up coming out of this with something that was longer but not forever, I don't know that that's a bad thing either.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I think from my conversations with Rhonda, too, I think that's the kind of thing she's prepared for.
I still think 10 years is enough, but that's
I know, George, you probably went like this, so I've been selected. I was saying this earlier, been called for jury duty up in Adams County, and Chuck is like, just find them all innocent. I'm like, it doesn't work that way.
As long as it's in Adams County.
There you go. All right, George, thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
You've
been talking with us.
Thanks for having me. I had a whole bunch of expletives, too. I'll save them.
Okay, save them next time. Save them next time.
All right, take care,
George.
We've been talking with the 18th, the district attorney, the 18th Judicial District, George Brockler.
He's tremendous. He is just tremendous.
When we come back,